Thanks for coming. I think adding Charles Olson to the bill.
It should be a great discussion. It's too bad.
Keeps people might have to away.
Do it, might have to do it again.
Why would you think it keeps people away?
Because, I mean, you can't read Charles Olson without being culpable. You're responsible now. He indicts you. He implicates you. And that's... does anybody want to do that?
And Vincent doesn't?
No, Vincent does.
I was going to say that's what you said about Vincent.
No, Vincent does. Vincent does. Vincent does it too, but I think... yeah. I think Vincent, like how the woman said the other night, Vincent was a heart poet and Olson was a head poet. I don't know why people, I think Vincent's like maybe more playful or something.
So when did Vincent and Olson meet?
Great question.
1948.
When Vincent first came to Gloucester?
No, Olson had come to hang out with his mom, and he had read Vince in a little magazine.
Oh.
I think the poem was This House that he read. Could have been another one. And he came to... he went up to Vincent's house on Liberty Street and knocked on the door. My cousin Sheila was there, and she always talks about how this... So she was... That was... You know, she was a kid. She was probably 6 or 7. And there's another one, Gabe.
God, I can't believe it.
And she tells this great story about Olson having to, like, almost bend down to the ground to get in through the front door, because it was a small door.
I've never seen 3 Liberty Street, but it sounds like a small place, and I can imagine Olson towering over it.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Nice.
Vincent didn't exactly like that. He said heart-mind.
Oh, yes, but the heart came first.
Hey.
But he didn't think that division was right.
Oh.
What do you got there?
Charles Olson.
Letters home.
Interesting.
Nice.
Now, home. Where would home be?
Lots of people.
Lots of people in Gloucester. Yeah.
Right.
You wrote back here, yeah.
Okay.
As opposed to
I know it would be home in Gloucester, but there were many people, and many places weren't there. He was in Buffalo, right? So.
Yeah.
Well, these are all personal letters.
Yeah. Well, that would be very interesting.
Peter Anastas and James Cook led a study group on Olson before there was a big celebration.
Mm-hmm.
Olson. That was great. That's what I got this up.
Right on.
Nice.
And the Olson Reader, which I can't find my copy. I might have brought it here and left it.
I don't know
what happened to it. Would it?
Well, if you want to quote from it tonight, we have it.
Oh, well, I don't necessarily, but I want to find my own.
Wow.
Have it out anyway.
And there's a fat guide.
Yes.
Yeah.
That could be helpful.
Oh.
Because you don't know half the people he's talking about here.
Yeah.
No, it's indispensable for reading Olson.
Mm. And that's Vincent's copy that he gave to Annie. So I've tried to read what it says there, but my cursive isn't too good. What's the inscription?
As an introduction to his poems and all it entails... And to news, it's news. Not quite clear.
Let's see.
Words.
Thank you.
Let's see. That must be. It all entails. Yeah, interesting. As to news.
And maybe all of its
like
uses, maybe?
Oh.
Of it,
that looks like entails.
Entails.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a clue.
Tales and means?
Yeah.
And it means? I don't know.
I don't
but that's
know
all right. That's great.
Does anybody want to say something about how these two people sit in your mind? Say anything about their relationship?
Well, I was a kid then, so I didn't. I mean, but we all thought it was so really like kind of nasty of Charles
mm-hmm.
to write so meanly of Vincent. And I haven't read it for years, and I read it, you know, today, and it's like, yeah, he was piling on. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like he was jealous. Although you have a different take, Dan. You're thinking what, from a psychology point of view?
It's competitive. They were vying for the voice of Gloucester, right? And mm-hmm. who's the real voice of Gloucester, you know? I know the streets, now I know the streets of Gloucester, right?
But I don't think Vincent was doing that.
No, but
it was Charles's.
Charles wrote the poem, right?
Yeah, right,
so
right.
I think Charles, you know, if I had to posit, I think his I mean, is this pre or post, you know, Black Mountain? So
oh, post.
Right,
yeah.
So
yeah.
His ego is running strong, and here's this uppity other guy in Gloucester trying to, you know, be a voice, and, well, you know, Charles. I mean, Charles was a big, overbearing man that wanted his, I want to be Maximus. Right?
I know.
And how dare this, you know?
Well, he was also, you know, Vincent had written a whole bunch of volumes before mm-hmm. Charles wrote that.
Mm. Was this Charles's first?
Yeah, I believe so.
Really?
You know, he wrote Call Me Ishmael, which wasn't, you know, which is literature, not
right.
not poetry.
Interesting.
But yeah, and so when he came here, you know, and Vincent sort of gave him, you know, Vincent gave him the idea of the Maximus poems, you know. And the first, I don't know if he gave him the idea, but the first Maximus poem was written to Vincent. So that opened it up, and then from there he just like went wild.
Yeah.
Olson did.
And he must have delved into so much history.
Oh, my God,
with the
yeah.
names and
yeah,
events. And, yeah.
Well, that's, you know, he says it's hard to be a historian and a poet. You know, because they're so, but he brought so much history into his work.
Yeah, and it works.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. It works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, did he actually go? He did actually go out a few times in the summers on some of the schooners.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think one summer he worked. There's a book over there. The cover is him on the the cover has the swordfish boat on it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
Journal
yeah.
of the child, yeah.
Really cool journal.
Did your dad know Olson? I mean, did they ever?
More my mother. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dad didn't, my father didn't get into culture too much. I shouldn't say that.
Well, he liked Joe Garland's version of culture, I suspect.
Oh,
you know, that was more his. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Joe was a personal friend because
right,
he worked
right.
on Joe's boats.
But he's also salt of the earth.
Yeah, he was.
Things, right?
He was, right. A friend gave him a sign once, because my father had a workshop down Rocky Neck where he built his boats, where my brother lives now, and some friends gave him a sign, made of it was like a boomerang, and it said Sibs Cultural End Society, and I think they meant Sibs End Cultural
right.
Society, but we always read it that way. So it's like, oh, this is, and of course my brother George still has it in his hangout.
Right.
So, but oh, sounds like history. But so it's interesting in a way then, because and Charles had more of a root in Gloucester than Vincent at that time. So.
Well, yeah, he had come here as a child.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And had all those Proustian visions. But,
Yeah. But Vincent wrote about the place, and I think, you know, he was, I think Olson they both got a lot from each other, but I agree with you about that poem. It's pretty rough going.
Yeah.
Is it short enough to read?
It goes on for six pages.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's like disgusting.
I don't have that itself is quite a...
Right.
I know. That's quite a statement right there. Yeah. He says, letter five. And he gets into, you know, really... He gets so
we
personal.
We should read it. Everybody should
read
it.
Yeah, we should take turns.
Yeah.
Why don't we do
well,
that?
Well, in the outline... This is my intention was to go beyond letter five.
Let's go beyond.
Okay. Maybe we should start with it, and so then we can go
to
beyond.
Get beyond. You have to start. You need a starting point, right?
Gabe, you want to begin?
Oh boy. Okay. Letter five. As in summer, a newspaper; now in spring, a magazine. Though how Gloucester will know what damage only Brown's window this quarterly will not be read. The habit of newsprint, plus possibly the National Geographic, are the limits of literacy. Though that the many want any more than who died, what scrod brought the market basket, what movies, gore and sales, the queer doings, Rockport or Squibb's coyness about the Antigonish men was pulled out 3 a.m. from under Kislom's wharf mumbling. I am not at all aware that anything more than that is called for. Limits are what any of us are inside of.
Yeah.
And there is nothing less applicable than the complaints of the culture mongers about what the people don't know, but oh, how beautiful they are, how infinite, and think how it will be when Saint Santa Claus, how they need is the last for, oh, how they bleed the poor children. I'll go to three. Editor of a Gloucester Quarterly, the eyes which watch you do not look in the plate glass of Brown's that display, or idly waiting for the bus, stare at your cover in the waiting station. If Lufkin has got over his scare last summer, when you were so sillily reviewed in the local press, as sillily as you now show yourself, bringing such an issue as this into the public domain. Helen Stein's eyes, and those others, Gloucester, who can still look right straight down into your pages, into the pages of this sheet. You've had the nerve, no different from their nerve, to put upon the public street. Two. It is not the many but the few who care, who keep alive what you set out to do, to offer Gloucester poems and stories. The high school flickers, not the end, but what you here bring in is not such young thing, such as you, perhaps, I think, and Helen Stein and Herman Melville, as who does not when who begins. Nor is it something else. What it ought to seek to be, as much as one Carl Olson used to bring to port from another Brown's then merchandise, a peak of the ocean's floor he knew so well, the care he gave his trade, his listening at 17 to Callaghan, as Callaghan at 17 to Bolin to Smith Olson, could set his dories out as a landman sows his field and reaps such halibut it was to walk the streets of Gloucester different, to see a sight abroad, the Ray aboard the Raymond, as you should walk it, had you done your job.
Now, the publication he was talking about, The Four Winds?
Yeah, we're just about to read it.
Okay. Yeah, I've never seen that.
No, we've got a few.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess
I
it
which,
really offended Charles.
Yes. Yeah.
From this. So I start with number three, yes. I do not know that Four Winds has a place, or I, a site in it, in a city where highliners breed, if it is not as good as fish is, as knowing as a halibut knows its grounds, as Olson knows those grounds, its stories as good as any of us are, stories as even Squibs knows what men have done in dories, as women have had it, raising kids in such an unsteady economy, nor assuage yourself, I use the local as a stick to beat you, such pages as you now have published twice do not need one small Gloucester thing to be a Gloucester magazine. The point of the fix of your cover is otherwise. I prefer it, in fact, to the rhetoric of your title. North 42 degrees 37 minutes, west 70 degrees 40 minutes. It is enough, Gloucester, to say where it is, had you also the will to be as fine as fins are, as firm as a mackerel is fresh out of water, as sure as no owner is or he'd be to sea, as vulnerable as I am brought home to Main Street in such negligible company. I mean, really, you have had a broken trip, Mr. Farini, and you should go hide in your cellar. As a Portuguese skipper once had to, he'd so scared before a storm and run for it, leaving two of his men on the sea in a dory. That was a wicked thing to do. Or, take it as I know you have to take it, landwise, making frames over East Main Street, the wife tutoring, the two of you with children to bring up. You are more like Gloucester now is than I, who hark back to an older polis, who has this tie to a time when the port... I have not named Maximus for no cause. I know. When blueberries, if you go for Highbush to Dogtown, or July with pails up Old Salem Road, I'll not be there as I used to chase butterflies, or bitten all day cut brush at the new alewife. That day was a sign for Rini. The C&R Construction Company had hired us Gloss to help because the contract read local, quote unquote, and fired us after 12 hours, had tripped the city's lawyers, had covered by one day's cash the letter of the law. The new way does promote cleverness. The main chance is its law. And you who've come after, who've not known the ones had to crawl up out of Braces Cove, even in Red Jacks, will not so easily know the gray-eyed one it does take to make a man's chest shine, and he shake off the salt, the muck of the inshore sea, the sludge of all shallows. You can stop at number five. Mm-hmm.
I'd not urge anyone back. Back is no value as better. That sentimentality has no place, least of all Gloucester, where polis still thrives. Back is only for those who do not move, as future is. You in particular need to be warned. Any of you who have the habit of the people, in quotes, as though there were anything the equal of the context of now. I'll put care where you are, on those streets I know as well as, or better. I have the advantage. I was a letter carrier, read postcards, lamped checks, talked at the back doors. I'll meet you anywhere you say. The beer's best, the pipes are kept cleaner, at the Anchor Inn, as the old captain called his bar with an old name. You know it, at the head of the Atlantic Supply Wharf, Piney's Wharf, it got called, from Ben's magazine fame, Collier's, and all those. Though I was never mentioned, he was the best choice to race the Blue Nose, dating back, as I do, to the first race, to the Puritan and the Elizabeth Howard, and Marty Callaghan, fouling the boom of the Henry Ford just inside the breakwater. You see, I can't get away from the old measure of care, how your magazine doesn't raise me, not even Hugh Hill, whose triangles are so nicely made, but the course he's running doesn't strike me as good enough to come home a winner, as the Blue Nose so often did after the Columbia was lost. Did you know, by the way, that it was off Sable that she did go down? That a trawler a few years back caught her nose, and she came up long enough before the beam broke for the letters to be read, gold on black. Columbia, or C-O-L-U-M-B-E-I-A. Somebody, I should pass it on.
Thank you, Diane.
I'll try once more to meet you. What about Sterling's drug? Is that where you are? Surely, not at the library. Or you'd at least show that correction which so many of the other little magazines now so show. The schoolboy renaissance. As you are differently a dither, with that future, so many of your pieces show the looseness of the search, the Steiner mystique, the mind, Farini, is as much of a labor as to lift an arm flawlessly, or to read stand in the butter on the head of a lead and be precise about what sort of button your vessel's over. What sort of bottom your vessel's over. I begin to be damned to figure out where we can meet. I liked your own house that first day that I sought you out. You will recall that I came to your door just because I had read a poem by you in just such a little magazine as you now purport to edit. A magazine does have this life to it, proper to it, does have streets, can show lights, movie houses, bars, and occasionally, for those of us who do live our life quite properly in print, as properly, say, as Gloucester people live in Gloucester, you do meet someone, as I met you on a printed page.
Where are you?
Right where that 8
number
is.
He does go on.
Only a few more.
Or let me call it Island, or something more exact. Gloucester, just that flat. Making my polis yours. Or if you have to be romantic, why not call it the Three Turks' Heads? And have something at least which belongs to the truth of the place, as John Smith so strikingly did. Your magazine might excuse itself if it walked on those legs all the things walk on their own. That is, it might, if you knew that a literary magazine is not, for example, politics. Even a man's own personal politics, what sticks out in this issue is verse from at first four other editors of literary magazines. Do you think such scratch me back gets by your eyes? The few of us there are who read. Nor is it life with a capital F. The shocking play you publish with God as the master of the ship. In Gloucester town you publish it, where men have cause to know where God is, when wooden ships or steel ships with sail or power are out on men's business, on waters which are tides, Farini, you are not gods. On waves, and waves are not the same as deep water, and themselves and their vessel in the hands of winds, Farini, which are never for, which have their grave dangers, as writing does. Just because weather is very precious to the quarter it comes from, as writing it is, if it is as good as.
I love that. And this is not, you know, free or not gods. It's not possessive. It's plural. It's no use. There's no place we can meet. You have left Gloucester. You are not there. You are anywhere where there are little magazines who will publish you.
That's it.
But you know, the thing that was, when I was talking, I talked to Vincent about this poem a bunch, and you know, he said, all of his friends were like really, really pissed that Olson wrote this. Mm-hmm. And his feeling, one of his feelings, I'm sure he was devastated, but would never talk about that. But one thing that he did talk about, he said, well, I got this poem out of him by what I did, and he wrote this amazing poem, and it is an amazing poem about him seeing, you know, that response to Vincent's editorial work, and you know, the other sort of interesting side of it is that because of this poem, letter number 5, Vincent got a lot of, you know, people picked up on him and read his stuff via Olson. So, you know, it's quite a story.
Yeah. Now, they, after a while, didn't they continue to be friends?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Vincent wrote some beautiful stuff about Olson where, and Olson called him and Mary Shore his, you know, his only true brother and sister.
Huh.
You know.
Interesting.
So, yeah, there was a lot of...
So it was like sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
Vincent got under his skin, clearly.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But, I mean, that I love that... there's so many great lines.
Oh, it's got beautiful lines. Yeah.
The mind, Farini, is as much of a labor as to lift an arm flawlessly. It's one of my faves. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So it was. So do we have the one that has? I think there are only 5 4 winds. Do we have
I've
all?
I've definitely
those
seen 4 winds in here. And I just have to locate where the I've seen it. I don't know if you put the numbers at the end or the beginning. I think it's. I'll be right back.
It's probably under Ferrini, I'd imagine, since he was the editor, one of the editors, as well as his wife, Peg.
Peg was also an editor.
I believe so.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, would Vincent would have poetry in it as well, his own.
Yeah, but that particular one, he's making reference to this play that he wrote, which is about a ghost ship.
Ah.
Telling of the North Star, it's called.
Ha.
It's about this ghost ship that sails into Gloucester. And that's all I can tell you about it.
Okay. And Charles found it shocking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he didn't like any of it, obviously. I mean, I don't know. Was he published in it?
I don't know. He didn't have anything in it, I guess.
I don't know.
Maybe he felt left out.
Yes, I think you hit it with the jealousy. I think that's really sort of it.
But I'm glad they reconciled.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in a way, I mean, Vincent never unreconciled. I mean, the break was on Charles's part, really, wasn't it, mostly?
Well, this particular poem, yeah, I mean, geez,
yeah.
That...
I know.
That, in his first major book.
Yeah.
You know.
But I guess, in a way, you know, Vincent was right. It, like, it established him as the other poet of Gloucester.
Yeah. What is it? Is it Kim in there? What does Butterick say about letter five? I'm sure there's. I mean, it should be you know, page 17.
It should be page 17.
Yeah, the way it's set up is via the page.
I should give it to you because you know there it is.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so here, let me read what Butterick has to say about this letter five. Written April 1953 at Black Mountain, Olson wrote to Vincent Farini on April 9th, a Thursday. Quote, "The enclosed is what your magazine in last Saturday night provoked. However, you do not include copies of the poem at this point. I had carbons, but the damn carbons were sticking the rewrite, so I finally wrote the whole thing straight on one bond and did not send the letter until May 1st and seven Maximus letters later. And in the meantime, I have rewritten the three of them immediate to yourself. Actually, six or seven only carry on the argument reached at you finally in five," he continues. And he says, "It's all crazy, for as from the start, you there are the nexus, Vince, from the beginning, 3 years ago. That this time I had to drub you. Well, I hope you will find it in your heart to weigh it with the presiding fact to me that I can't believe whatever the whole issue of these Maximus poems turns out to be would have been at all if you did not now be there. So I'm immediately persuaded that it is one of those crazy doublets of experience. And please try to find your way to stay with me in the endeavor." So that's something, huh?
He's kind of asking for his forgiveness.
Farini would have his first taste of the poems from Sid Corman, who went to Gloucester at Olson's request to read Maximus 1-10 to him. A further sense of the writing and rewriting of this and the poems immediately following can be had from notes found among the poet's papers. April 8th, 53, parentheses, "Wed in midst of Maximus, 5-6-7, continues to stay on top of Maxie's, made the long 8 and stretched the 9 through Friday, a week ago Sunday, when this run of Maxie's started." So, and then it goes on to, as Butterick does in this thing, to sort of shed light on all the aspects of the poem that people who didn't know Gloucester wouldn't understand, like Lufkin's Diner, you know, Helen Stein even talks about Melville, and that's why this is, it's fascinating to, and so these references here, just for letter five, are one, you know, like 8 pages of references to that one poem.
Wow.
Yeah.
What does he say about Helen Stein?
Oh, he says that 1897-64, local painter, friend of Marsden Hartley, later Vincent Farini, and his co-author, Mary Shore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And she's in the Cape Ann Museum, bottom floor. Check it out. You guys want to see what her eyes look like?
She had very large dark eyes.
Yeah.
I think there was mention of mirror there too.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something else interesting going on here, because if Olson were just talking about Farini's literary development, he would have referenced the all those Lynn books, right? He would have, if he felt that he was taking a misstep or that he was betraying his own development or something, he would have said, "Vince, look at all that beautiful stuff that you did in Lynn, and where are you now?" But that isn't what he says, really.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm wondering is if Olson is seeing this kind of new fountain come up out of Gloucester that he wants to direct, or that he thinks that there's a certain. I'll wait till you're finished with the book.
Hmm.
Is that okay to go on, or do you want to look at this?
I'm with you, Martin.
Okay. Because what Olson's bringing out, which seems quite different from what Farini did in Lynn, right? He's talking about this kind of broad brush image of Gloucester with its great historical roots, and there's all of that antique reference about the archetypes of Gloucester, the geographic nexus here, all that kind of stuff, and that's what. And you can say that's a kind of Melville origin, isn't it? That's the direction that Olson's taken on, and Maximus is in that kind of vein, isn't it? Whereas Vincent was, and I don't know that much about his work, but what we read here in the last couple of weeks was very common man oriented. It was contemporary people that he saw around him and their struggles for life and the kind of the nobility of the human spirit and everything. But it's not. But the history part is it's present, but it's not the emphasis, mm-hmm. right? So now, bingo, early 50s. There's a sort of a convergence of these two voices, isn't there? And I don't know anything about what came out in Four Winds, but if Olson is figuring that that's the fertile direction to go with Gloucester, and then maybe he felt that Farini's missing the opportunity to grow in that direction, move in that direction, that kind of thing, right?
Well.
And what
that could be, but Olson was, he's like the Harvard historian, and that those were his roots and his mm-hmm. roots in Gloucester. So of course he's going to unbury that. Vincent, I think what you said was right, Martin. Vincent was more interested in what he saw, in the people. Mm-hmm. But I think the big thing here was that Olson was pissed. That he talks about the four editors. Mm-hmm. So I wish we had the thing here because it's in there.
Here's the Four Winds, it has one of Olson's Maximus poems.
But is it the one that has the North Star in it?
About the ghost ship.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. So I don't think this is the one he was referring to. But Sputnik must say which number Four Winds.
That riled him up. Now, was he at Black Mountain the whole time he wrote Maximus poems?
Yeah, well, he was at Black Mountain. They were corresponding from Black Mountain to Gloucester.
Okay, I thought he was in town at the time. That's interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So in a way, he's
goes
feeling
up to the mountain and writes about the sea.
Yeah. And maybe he's feeling left out. He probably is jealous of Vincent, who's here, and he's there. Even though there was a great place, I think, mm-hmm. Black Mountain College, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. Edgefield's beautiful.
Yeah.
Really beautiful.
Just as
the
beautiful
mountains
as Gloucester.
Shoot up all around, yeah. And it's a lot of national forest land all around it.
You've been there.
Yeah, I was there this summer, actually. I've been there a few times.
So if it's an attack...
Beautiful.
But maybe that's a frustration because he's out of place, right?
Yes.
So kind of to what you're speaking of is there's this element of, like, mm-hmm. Olson's polis, right? He's about the place. And here comes Vincent talking about the people who occupy that place, and Olson's not there. Mm. So he's not connecting with the people. So how dare you kind of access what's happening and thriving in my place, which has now become almost like this mythologized place in my head.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about the, like, and this is like James Joyce, right? This is the human, the common man is the mythos. But I'm off in Black Mountain doing my thing and talking about this sort of place that I mythologized in my head. And you're on the streets living it. So you're in the breathing, living city. So here I am, a contemporary poet, and I'm writing about Rome, and you're living it, Your reality is kind of messing with my fiction.
So it's an attack.
Yeah.
But that's what everybody says. You have to attack something. So what is Charles Olson? I mean, if you're launching an attack, it has a impact. Mm. So I think we know it's an attack.
Right.
Yeah.
What's Olson attacking Vincent for?
My displacement. I'm displaced, and I'm upset because you're plugged into where I want to be, and I want to be the heart and breath and poet of Gloucester, and. Damn it, you're there. You're breathing the air, and you're speaking about the breath, and this is what Gloucester tastes like today, and I'm trying to sit back in my head and reflect and be like, all right, you know, so I'm down in Cripple Cove, and what's happening now? And it's retroactive, not contemporary. And these are contemporary poets, right? They're supposed to be the heart of what's happening now, and putting that in the context of, like, I think Olson's looking at the now in the context of the history of Gloucester. Where are we now? What polis is this, right? Like, change is what he's all about, but what's the heart of Gloucester? And here comes some guy saying, and you know, today Peg opened the bookshop, you know? And he's missing out on that. I think there's a lot of displacement. He's a mountain guy.
It'd be good.
And he knows the streets.
Yeah. It'd be good to find that addition with the shocking play.
Yeah.
Because that would be kind of a clue. I mean, just speculating, but if it was about, say, a ghost ship, then maybe from following your thread, Dan, Charles was very frustrated because Vincent was mythologizing about something, whereas when he was there, and Charles was doing his real stuff from history, and he's not there. I don't know.
But Charles is the beat writer. I mean, beat like beatnik. I mean, beat like this is my beat. I walk the streets.
Right.
I delivered the mail. I knew what.
I know.
Everybody
he
on
felt,
Mount Pleasant was getting the mail that day. This is my neighborhood. But the neighborhood I'm talking about is still moving on. Well, it's kind of like me with Mason, right? I don't know what's going on Mason anymore, but I mythologize. It's where I was born. These are my streets, but the streets have changed because. I'm elsewhere, I'm displaced,
right.
People. And I wonder if there is sort of a, if you're to be the poet laureate of a space and you identify yourself as like, well, this is this, and you're not there, so you actually don't know what this is. I can tell you what this is, but I'm not present for it. I'm actually antiquated. You know, how old was he when he wrote this, do you know?
Well, 53, so he'd be 43.
So.
43.
All right, so I'm
43.
Well,
hey.
Let me tell you.
Prime of life.
Well, but there is this reality of time is passing me by, but I'm at the cusp of that. You know, I'm just thinking, like, as a 43-year-old now, like in 2 weeks, my wife and I are going to go see a band who I loved when I was young, and suddenly we're going, their first album came out 40 years ago? No, they're cool, hip, and contemporary, right? So is Olson, is this a midlife crisis poem, and like, curse you, Farini, because you're still there and breathing it and living it, you know? You're more plugged in than me, and I'm jealous.
Can I suggest something here that maybe for the next poem we should read, this one that's in Four Winds, which is by Charles Olson.
Yes.
Which is Maximus de Gloucester, Letter 3, which I'm sure many of you will know. Is that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Show us the tansy, Henry. Show us the drops.
Oh, Gabe
tansy
knows everything.
Tansy for my city. Tansy for their noses. Tansy for them. Tansy for Gloucester to make the smell of all owners. The smell. Tansy for all of us. Let such as these cheap comers stand back. Let them free the way for the men of the fort to Middle Street, to buy the white houses. Or they who leave Portuguese Hill, who leave the lady, sell their schooners with greyhounds aft the long diesels, and leave Gloucester in the present shape of the wonderful ship stolen by ownership. The wonder ship stolen by ownership. Tansy from Cressy's, I rolled in as a boy and did not know it was. Did you know, she said, growing up there, how rare it was? And it turned out later, she meant exactly the long field drops down from what Ravenswood, where the land abrupts, this side, Freshwater Cove, and throws out that wonder, that descending green, running. Where the muster, the Essex County, the others, Labor Day used to throw such water, those arcs run with summer, with tansy. And I, for another of so many of the people in my city, my father, that is, came. And not from the provinces, not from Newfoundland. I said he came when there were 376 sail could fill the harbor. And they all in, like for the races or San Pietro. Yes, I knew, because I had that to compare to it. I knew, because I had that to compare it, was Worcester. Again. As the people.
As the people of the earth are now, Gloucester is heterogeneous, and so can no polis. Not as localism, not that deathly new sick, that trick of corporations, newspapers, movie houses, as the ships, even the wharves, absentee owned. They whine to my people, these entertainers, hirers, they play upon their fears, bigotries. They, these, have the nerve to speak for that lovely hour at the waiting station, 5 o'clock, the Magnolia bus, Annisquam, Lanesville, the difference from 1 o'clock, 5:20, and nobody but Darb Levy. These, right in my people's faces, and not at all as the gulls do it, who cover the sheets of the Times, blowing the day after, under the racks or floating, off town landing, the slime, the low tide reveals. What did you call it as a kid? The black pudding?
It was black mayonnaise.
Oh, the black mayonnaise, yes. The word intimidates. Anyone is that open. The paycheck does, and these cheap men, oh, Tansy City, Root City, let them not make you as the nation is. I speak to any of you, not to you all, to no group, not to the citizens of my city, as my Tyrion might have. Polis now is a few, is a coherence, not yet new. The island of a city is a mainland, now of who? Only a man or girl who hear a word, and that word meant to mean not anything the least more than its very self. Not at all to sell any one thing, to keep them anywhere, not even in this rare place. But root person and root place, hear one tansy-covered man tell you what a doctor, say, or any knowing man of your city might, if they dared afford to take the risk, if they knew that you should not be played with, that you deserve the best, they'd tell you the state of the pilings that one, or whoever, for that matter any of us, stands by. The difference. But there are those below water, or in afternoon, will not outrage you in that next edition, to keep you slaves, as he is slave whom you read, as the bus starts off. Fear of periods, jeez. By his foul slaver, he'll keep you off the sea. He'll keep you local, my Nova Scotians, Newfoundlanders, Sicilianos, Isolitos, mm-hmm. Isolated person in Gloucester, Massachusetts. I, Maximus, address you, islands of men and girls. The editor's note? Editor's note. Tansy, a genus of... Yeah, you got me on that one.
It's a flower.
Gerbaceous plants. Having an aromatic odor, a very bitter taste, and tonic properties.
I was reading. That along with this, and that's a different poem.
Huh. Ah.
So this was. It was.
He edited
for this. Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is earlier.
That's earlier. Yeah.
Interesting.
And he wasn't too proud to be in Four Winds.
Right.
it's the same poem. They just refined it for sure. Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So is it the fear then the little man comes in with his little magazine and is hijacking my
Well, he's writing in his magazine.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah, but is that reclamation?
Who knows?
I think the first night...
There's a...
Gabe talked about the birds in the backyard. I think they sort of occupy different biological niches in the same space, mm-hmm. but you know, sort of layered, mm-hmm. one
yep.
for the place and one for the people.
Yep.
True.
Still doesn't add up that it would be petty.
It's like
yeah.
he had to have this tantrum, I guess.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
Well, okay, I have something to say.
I mean, but why? I mean, here's a guy that's 6 feet eight. Here's a guy that's you know, got lots of stature.
Yeah.
He's got position. He's got...
But he's not
but
secure.
Maybe he didn't believe it.
Yeah,
maybe he was.
Well, but Gabe has something to
yeah.
say.
Okay.
So, I talked about the implication early on. And... we are implicated in everything Charles Olson's talking about with our words, what we've said in the past 30 minutes. This is dangerous. Your life hangs in the balance.
I'll follow you.
You don't follow me. This is it. Right now, we're responsible to this moment. So you said, why would he be petty? I don't find that petty. I think that's a whole heck of a lot to put out to a friend. This is what I'm going to get into later. This is why I called it beyond letter five. But if he's being petty there, how are we now? In this night, how are we? Are we going to take up what Olson's saying? And are we going to take up what he said, not just in letter five, but in letter... three. Are we going to take on that responsibility? I am. Absolutely. And I think that's the attack that he's laying on to Vincent. Not that Vincent doesn't know how to make it as a poet, because he does. He said, you already made Gloucester in poems with a frame. You already made it, dude. And I already know that you're in Gloucester. But it got like culture. You said the thing about the end of culture.
Yeah.
So Olson's saying, motherfucker, you can't write a poem if it's gonna go off without me not knowing where you're at. And you don't have to get into the navigational point. Your life is really happening, and it's dangerous, and you could lose it, and please don't. And this is the thing about the people. Because the people are all into all. Charles is saying, "You can't. You're not getting Helen Stein's eyes." What did Helen Stein do? If we check in the Cape Ann Museum, she was able to transmit her vision of Gloucester to a T.
That's Vincent, though. Vincent is saying the people who live and exist are the people who are here and just being, right? Charles is I Maximus, I Ishmael, right? He's going for that mythology. He wants Gloucester to be like epic. And he was a very petty man. You talk to Charlie and like, my dad may have been a giant of a dude, but he was a petty, selfish drunk, you know? Like, but you have this idea of like Charles Olson, the epic poet, blacks, you know, mountain school, but he's just a guy. And I think Vincent was trying to cut through the bullshit and say, you know what? It's a beautiful place, but see it for what it is. You don't have to put it on a pedestal to love it, you know?
I actually think that what's happening in letter five is he thinks that Vincent's not being appropriate to the people in Gloucester. And he's being cheap with the gravity of the humanity in Gloucester. That's what I think he's attacking Vincent for.
Look at the way he did it. That's just really
what?
Hard.
Being not true to the people of Gloucester, or whatever you said.
No, I think Vincent Farini has it down. I mean, he's got it. But I don't think Charles is saying. I think the attack that Charles is laying on to Vincent is that these people are real. Mm-hmm. And your poems better be as real as your life is. That's why your muscle, the mind is as real as a muscle, or the people that go out on ships. So he says four winds, It's like when you're about to die, it's not four winds that throw you over. And I think Olsen called for being appropriate to our life.
Don't you think that Olsen is attacking four winds? Do you think he's I don't think he's I think he's attacking this particular little book. I don't and he goes into Vince through the book. I don't see it as that. I mean, he says some really personal things about Vincent, about him, you know, there's some zingers in there for sure, but he's going in through that four winds is what he's responding to.
It's and I think the attack that he's leveling on four winds is not saying, hey man, you're fucking focusing on people. He's the whole Maximus poems is all about the people of Gloucester, the earth, what who lived here before, who stole what from who. I mean, it gets like really like bodily. I think what he's attacking Four Winds, this is what I think. I think what he's attacking Four Winds for is not being appropriate to the people of Gloucester in Charles Olson's perspective. And he has a right to his perspective, and maybe he's totally off on it.
So is it fear?
Specificity of it.
Is he reacting out of fear in his understanding? I mean, Charles knows, right? Like, you know, change is the only thing that's not, you know, change is going to change. We know that's going to be permanent. And I'm looking to the future and I'm seeing that Beauport Hotel. And that Beauport Hotel is not my people. That's not my Gloucester. That's not my history. And your magazine's coming out and bringing attention to Gloucester. And you might be inviting the outside. I mean, this is total speculation, but maybe Charles is thinking, I ran off to Black Mountain because if I stay here and do that here, if I start my school here, Gloucester is going to become the place. And then suddenly it's not the place because it becomes what's happening downtown. Like, it might have been like sort of a prophetic, this is the danger. If we write about what we love, people are going to come to where we love. And Vincent, you know, by putting out this magazine, you're putting a spotlight on us. And I did that too. And there's some danger here because if we do this, where goes our town? We suddenly become the magazine. We become the book of poems. We become the idea of Gloucester, not the Gloucester, and we lose the shipping. We lose the fishing. We lose the soul because we become the idea and not the reality. So I wonder if it's fear. Vincent, I'm going to attack you, damn it, because I did something risky, and now you're doing something risky, and if two of us are doing something risky and we're damn good at it, eek. Spotlight's on us.
I think that I would like to read a little bit past this letter and get into their friendship and kind of compare how they wrote after 1952 or 1953. This was published in 1975 by Vincent, and it's one of the last poems in his great book, The Selected Poems, that we've been talking about. And it's called The Theomania of Charles Olson. What's theomania?
Don't know.
Thea's life, right?
In my investigation, and from Vincent Farini, told me that Charles Olson said, find out for yourself. And what I found out about theomania is that it's divine madness or crazy wisdom. So, the theomania of Charles Olson. The torch went out and it's dawning in his night. The pillar that made the matrix gave breath up becoming the very road itself, taking back the fountainhead of ecstasy and above, pathfinders to origin, to the more we are ourselves, the more we give, breaking the darkness through to this juncture. The feast of resurrection. Who will ever forget the crack in the sky, that heralding sunset of January 10th? The eddies that his fist held slid away, and some are pools of aqua vitae in the woods of skulls. O earth, receive him, he who loved thee.
with such outgoing and such a penetration, fierce as devotion to principle, as so few treaders of this planet, for reaching out to get that inmost prize you hide, receive, dear Earth, against the despoilers, this quickener of thee and thine, this central human figure and his round and his rhythms of creation, to be alive as he by tasting the ichor of his presence.
Nice. What's ichor?
Fucking great question. Let's figure it out.
It's like sort of blood.
Yeah, it's like the essence.
Yeah, he did. Vincent did like all these kind of Greek words and strange things. The pleroma.
So that's Vincent. He published that in 75. That's a very, very a poem that's like absolutely filled with love.
Yikes.
So, I mean, crazy, like mad love, like Andre Breton's mad love. Because mad love is everything that disdains what is cheaply liberal. And we know Vincent was a little mad. So, okay, here we are. We're in Greek myths. Ichor, fluid flowing like blood in the veins of gods.
Mm. Oh.
Watery, acrid discharge from wounds, hence Icarus.
Yeah, Icarus.
So,
we need to do something with this book, eh?
So, That's why I called it Beyond Letter 5. Because that was a long time after Letter 5. And I just want to read a couple more things in the analogy. This is Vincent, and it's from his little piece called Public Love Letters. And he, god damn it, he was a good lover. I mean, I think that's one of the greatest love poems ever written, or that I've read. But I'm going to read one thing of Vincent that he wrote to Gloucester, and then I'm going to read one thing that Charles wrote to Gloucester. So this is, we are Sea Town, and sea is spelled S-E-E, town. Someday, one day, which is present, the star system will be recognized for being closer than just there in the skies. When some little or unknown people from Newburyport, our sister sea town, put on Jacques Brel, is alive and living in Gloucester at the Blackburn Tavern. Only a few of the actors were professional. Most of them lifted that play to standing ovations. Theresa was so genuine, she drew tears from my looking and hearing. And she was one of eight and three musicians who electrified Fishtown. That day, which is here, is full of living, the theater. There are persons here at the edge of raising life to art who don't need to watch others act for them. There are restless poems, nodding plays, fluid paintings, talking stories, moving sculptures and whatnot, who don't need to be exploited for the strictures of self-aggrandizement. Once in the ground of optimum creation, and we function at a minimum, everyone will be thriving at their fructifying, thank you, Annie, potential. Each and everyone in the community participating in whatever form erupts into action. Maybe that's this night.
A miraculous example is the poetry of mental patients. This is why what I was talking about earlier, Kim and Henry. Mental patients at Nor Haven, Minnesota. Each of them isolated ones are living out their poems and a number of them writing them down on paper with the aid of an assistant who understands. Each patient is included, each accepted on her terms. These people happen to be women and they publish a book. Thief of Sadness, the title of one of the poems. The drawings are like children's and so are the faces of the group on the back cover, therein expanding identities. The Newburyport actors did it for Jacques Brel. Their next play could be on our sea town. The mentally retarded at North Haven did it for the poems themselves, and they are working on their keepers. There are persons in town ready to do it for a theater of all the arts. The famous are here in this holy local, totally loco with the joys and tragedies. I'm posting the idea that the human stars on earth do not match all those above. For no human is excluded as no starlight is. Then it won't be the things to own that enrich life. We start by giving ourselves away like children do, their pictures, poems, songs, or stories, because there is more where they come from, thereby riding the winds of time. Vincent Farini. I feel, God, he won't stop involving us. Like, what are we gonna do after this? You know, are we? I mean, that was this was published in 1984.
What did you just read?
I read from Public Love Letters, and it was called "We Are Sea Town." And then I'm gonna read one more little thing, and then. I don't want to spoil this book, Hermit of the Clouds by Vincent, it's incredible, but there's a whole section about his affection towards Charles Olson, and this was published in 1988. But I want to read, something about, I mean, I think these guys are in love. I think that in a way they're really affectionate towards the place that we live and the world that we make up. And I don't know, it's kind of strange because I don't really see that. I mean, if I go down to my Nana's, I see that I'm beloved and I love her. But I don't see it in the music. I don't see it in the new, why is there all these, Victorian movies about kings and queens in the theaters now? I don't know, that's, it's upsetting, but these people, they're in love, you know?
You love Gloucester. I mean, Gloucester is one of the few places I've lived where the collective consensus is just blow the frickin' bridge up.
Mm-hmm.
Just be done with mm-hmm. the rest of the world. We got what we need here. And what we have here is, look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the only place I've ever lived where I caught my wife the other day, like, sorry I'm running late, but shit, did you see the sunset tonight?
Yeah.
I just had to pull over. I was Bass Rocks and I had to stop because there it is,
mm-hmm.
you know? There is something about Gloucester that sucks you in. I mean, you drink the water, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a transplant, you know, and I was laughing with my wife the other day saying, you know, after 7 years, you know, your skin changes.
Mm-hmm.
And something about Gloucester imbibes itself in you, and it becomes a place.
Hell yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. It's an ultra-sensible zone of earth,
mm-hmm.
as André Breton said of Martinique. Mm. So, I don't know. I just have a, you know, I'm under attack. I mean, you guys know that you're under attack. You mean your attention is under attack all day long.
Stay on.
Yeah, say more about
yeah.
what you mean.
Well, I mean, you can't leave your house without getting it. You can't leave your house without you being nothing but a consumer, you being nothing but a machine. And let me just say,
then I'll just speak for myself. My attention is under attack. I am... Fuck, man. What is he talking about? The ads. He's talking about the ads in 1962. How about the ads today?
Yeah.
I mean, well, I'm like trying to listen to Woody Guthrie. I gotta know. And there's a fucking Twix bar ad over the thing. Well, God, I mean, United Food Company? Fuck, man. I mean, it's an attack. And so, you know, you Chiquita bananas at the store. I mean, how much did Walt Whitman dream of the supermarket? But I do. You know? Maybe you guys don't
right,
feel
yeah.
Tune it out.
No, it's a choice, man.
Tune it out.
It's a choice.
It's a tune
right.
it out. Yeah, we don't
yeah.
have a television.
Tune
we don't have
out.
Cell phones.
But
we
you
get
don't
our
work
vegetables
at tuning it out, I think.
From a Prilla farm. You
Maybe.
Just, you know what? You know what grabs my attention is I work at O'Mealy and I walk from Rocky Neck all the way across town most mornings, and what catches my eye is just Gloucester.
Yeah.
And where are the adverts?
Yeah.
If you're not plugged in, you don't see them. The advertisements is watching two seagulls fighting over a piece of bread, you know,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
strolling through the park down across Pratties and
mm-hmm.
being like, who slept here tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the lonely sleeping bag? Like, that's what grabs your mind. You can block that out when it's like candy. It's vacuous. So
mm-hmm.
let it go.
Yeah, I am extremely distressed every day and by this. I mean, constantly. It makes me feel like suicidal, not in the sense that I want to kill myself, but that I am killing myself. Now, when I go walk on Good Harbor Beach, or when I look up at the stars that Vincent was talking about, I get cured immediately.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But when I'm contained, whew, it's I just it's. I have to read a Vincent Farini poem.
Or watch the lunar eclipse, because that was killer. You know, when it went crimson at that moment over Brace's Cove, that was like perfection. It was a perfect night.
So this is from 1968, and it was published in the Gloucester Daily Times. Did you guys see the cover of the Gloucester Daily Times on Monday with the new addition to the Sawyer Free Library?
No.
Oh, I don't. I'll just let you.
Yeah.
Maybe the seagull shit on the article, like Olson was saying about the old newspapers covered in seagull shit. This is called Noise Pollution.
Are you talking about the police presence? Is that what you're talking about?
That's it. Martin,
oh, that,
the article,
yeah,
did you
yeah,
see
yeah.
that?
They've
yeah.
hired 6 ex-police officers
wow.
to work to maintain security at the library because there was a drug deal, but, you know,
whoa,
like...
6 is kind of overboard.
It's overboard, and, you know, if you got William Burroughs on your shelves, expect a drug deal, let it go.
Yeah.
You know, our daughter's 3, and she plays there freely, and she's safe, and I don't worry about her.
How long? I mean, this is, again, like...
For how long are these guys working this deal?
This is the new... Because we're paranoid and reactive and we want mouse.
How long? Does anybody know how long has the Sawyer Free been gone? How long has it been there?
Oh, the library.
This is a big thing with Charles
yeah.
Olson. He's really focused constantly on like, wait, so why now? So I'll read this.
Okay.
It's really cute. It's almost like in one of these Lane paintings. Noise Pollution. August 8th, 1968. Did I miss the Jubilee? And I was trying to go. I was like, the tax, no one's going to pay taxes this year. That was 2018. It didn't. The prisoners were going to be released and knock on everybody's door. But it didn't happen. I was ready for that. Neighbors Silence, 10 Pounds Whale. This is by Paul Haringen. Maybe some of you guys know the guy. 10 Pound Island has a new tenant, a diaphragm horn, foghorn, but the people she sings to in Gloucester are working to evict the demon before another night is rent with her voice. Gloucester's poet, Charles Olson, wincing under her mournful wail Wednesday night, termed the sound noise pollution. This is 1968. And was the first of approximately 100 Gloucesterites to call the U.S. Coast Guard complaining of the noise. In fact, the noise was emanating from not the horn, but from the irate citizens, finally resulted in an order from Coast Guard Captain Fletcher W. Brown, which silenced the horn approximately at 1:30 a.m. Being born is power. Brown, captain of Port of Boston and commander of Boston Coast Guard Group, lives in Gloucester and was himself barraged by many phone calls. At about 1 a.m. Thursday, Captain Brown called Engineman First Class Charles Poulin, deputy officer of Dolivier's Neck Lifeboat Station, giving the command to silence the new device. Cut the wires! This is the next section. When Captain Brown was informed by Poulin that the horn could not be turned off, he told Poulin to go out to the island and cut the power wires to the device. Poulin dispatched a crew aboard a Coast Guard lifeboat to comply with the orders, and after sounding 5,170 times, the horn was finally silenced, much to the satisfaction of area residents.
Olson must have been counting, huh? 5,170 times.
No, this isn't written by Olson. This is written by a staff writer at the Gloucester Daily Times.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The horn was installed Wednesday morning by the Coast Guard aide to navigation section based in Boston. It was designed to replace the old 10-pound island bell.
A bell.
Which for years warned mariners away from the island's shoals. Due to electrical problems during the installation Wednesday, the horn was turned on permanently. It is designed, however, to be controlled by Eastern Point Lighthouse. Warning in the fog. But according to the Coast Guard, the horn will be reconnected. Probably today, because a sound signal must operate on the island in case of heavy fog. The order to replace the bell, according to the Coast Guard, came after many complaints that the bell could not be heard by large power vessels. The horn sounding cycle is 6 blasts every 20 seconds. Coast Guard spokesman in Boston today said the horn will be reconnected, but the order which will bring it back has not been issued. Engineman Poulin said the horn must be reconnected because it is officially listed in navigational publications. Notice needed, quote, "We can't hook up the bell again, not for at least 45 days, Poulin said, because we must first publish such a change in the official notice to mariners. The horn is a permanent replacement for the bell, Poulin said. Olson's complaint. This was published in the newspaper. The wrath of a poet, meanwhile, sounded even more loudly this morning when Charles Olson was contacted by telephone. Quote, "We must fight the sound. It's 1984. It's one of those foul, dirty things like a gun. The ere," archaic spelling, "of Gloucester cannot be fridged." Spell air, A-I-R-E. "Gloucester is one place where it cannot happen. It's the future. It's got an unnecessary decibel voice. Maybe that's how she died. She just lowered her voice late in the night. The horror. It's the future singing. Changes your whole sense of things like those lights. We must fight the thing, fight the sound. The looting of Gloucester must stop. Remove it. Stop the goddamn sound. It will ruin the fog. It's an intrusion on the fog. We must all fight this newfangled shit." And like the horn, the poet suddenly became abrupt. And then abruptly, "It's Washington, Dig." 10 pounds answer, militancy. The dispute between the U.S. Coast Guard and Gloucester poet Charles Olson of Fort Square appears to be widening. Olson, since midsummer, has carried on a running battle with the guard over the newly installed foghorn on 10-pound Island, which he calls another addition to Gloucester's noise pollution. During a telephone conversation Monday, the sleepless poet said, "I figured out the solution. The answer to that foghorn is militancy. No wonder we have the Black Panthers. There are too many causes today. The answer to that damned thing is Gloucester militancy. Armed men." Charles Olson.
And it's so apt because the reason we're arming men and putting them in the library is because there's a contingent for this whole new library model, which is, we can't see in the stairwells. We don't have high-tech security. What if danger, terrorists, outsiders, them are going to come in and attack, you know, the library, right? There's this fear of the outside.
Fear.
The obsession. Yes. Fear of
and that we need technology to, like,
obsession with safety,
keep it
which
out.
You
yeah.
can't guarantee at all.
But it's the library. And we went to the meeting for the library, and people are like, you know, teenagers are having sex in the stairwells. I'm like, Jesus, I'm here every day. Like, what am I missing?
That's happening in the schools, isn't it?
Yeah, I work in the schools, and it's not happening there either.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah.
And they're hiring police there,
not
too.
Not here, but
right.
not necessarily,
it's,
but in other towns.
It's irrational fear. The Woozler, right? It's
you guys weren't having way. Unprotected sex in the bathrooms at your high school?
But it's interesting how they said that they put in this nasty horn because of the overpowered boats not hearing the bell.
Right.
So it's sort of like everything is
yeah.
ramping
so put a
up,
silencer on your motor.
The overpowered boats should just cut back. It's supposed to be a no-wake zone right around 10 pounds, so they should just cut back their motors, and then they'd hear a bell. I don't know what's there now.
On 10 pounds,
and everybody
yeah,
has all
no, because we hear the Woozler
high
on
that's
tech
out
way out, yeah,
navigational equipment in their boats, right? No matter if their boat's this big, they've got all this high tech navigation equipment. So why don't they know that there's
a big
island out there,
I know,
or a reef or a rock? You know, they don't need that horn
anyway.
Well, and if you're afraid of the outside. So you're creating this system to warn the outside that there's a crash, but you don't want the outside there. Well, if you're an insider, you know where 10 pound is. So it's a self-solving problem. If you're not from here, you'll crash or figure it out.
So not to... This book is out of print, and we talked about that we wanted... It should be in print. It should be in print. It's really, really good. But I'm not going to ruin it for you, but just a little bit about Charles Olson from Vincent in 88. A frame. This is Vincent Farini writing. In 1949, a great friendship began with the following poem. This house is holier than a temple. It is where I live and have my being. This house of bone and blood, modeled by the weathers of experience, is all I have. This house. After this house, which is me only, is dust, I will be in your house. Vincent Farini. A man's whole lifetime is affected by another person, who enters the stream of his days and years and stays in these waters. That's how Charles Olson visited me, stayed, and keeps flowing, as in life, so in death. Who, having visited him at the top floor tenement with those seven windows, seven eyes on every aspect of Gloucester, can forget that kitchen, the maps on his walls? Maps followed him everywhere, like budding poets wanting that waters of his nourishment. Who can ever forget once having known him?
We were living on Liberty Street near St. Anne's Church when coming home one night from General Electric Company, where I had been working for at least 9 years, Peg told me about a poet who had almost broken his head getting through, and I could not fathom how it might have been, and I was curious and sorry to have missed him. He came back the next night, a giant, to pay a fan call to another poet because he was smitten by a poem I had written and which had appeared in Imagi. I was pleased by the size of the man and the compliment. I liked him right off. His manner of ease and his candid quality, he made himself immediately at home as though he had been a member of the family. I instinctively knew it was a turning point then and the next two times. I had never heard of him, and he had written some poems, X and Y, and I was excited by what I was awaiting. I was excited by what I had awaiting me for reading. He was going to devote his life to poetry, as I long ago had. I was incredulous and charmed, and he talked like I did, at the center of things. I had this strong feeling the unexpected was in store. He told me about this book he had written, Call Me Ishmael, which I found in Carney's bookshop. It was the second time I felt the girth of the man. The first was himself. He bowled me over as a man who loved his fellow man, one at a time, with such an intensity that I felt like I was in my own person or the genuine recognition of myself by myself. But here it was, through him. And that's as great a treat as any man can hope to have whole, alive. He had it with me, so many other poets, and no man was ordinary, except all strata, living and hating, with equal passion. Those years when Betty was alive and I had those suppers with the Saturday evenings when the work week was behind me and I had that family to look forward to and the golden talk, I would bring with me bundles of groceries like my father used to on Friday afternoons when he was working. I knew I had met someone as close to me as my own blood, for the poem was as deep within him as it is with me, as far back as the first poem I wrote when I was 6, and then when I met Shelley and Keats. We were drawn to each other because of some lost, found element each had in each other. Then he dug me up. He ransacked my background and my early writings, scoured Lynn like the archaeologist he is. Everything was store for its uses in the mind bin of his. He never forgot anything, and his memory was sleepless. I know because he spoke of his visits to Lynn, where he had some relation, and on the same street I lived with my parents before my first marriage, Summer Street. He had read all my earlier works in the library, and the first book, No Smoke, may have touched him where I was at most and still am. It was a dramatic rendition of an industrial city stuck in the pits of the Great Depression of the 1930s, but I made my first literary boner. Going along with the publisher, I used fictitious names. That's what he avoided, this man of distances. He had a far greater grasp on the time situation than I had. He dealt with real people as I did, only he was complete. He used their names. He accepted the gamble. Out of our correspondence came the letters. It became his form. The first Maximus poems addressed to me sent me flying. He had me, as he so many times called me from Shelley's poem, the blithe spirit, and that's how I mostly felt in his company. How had he affected me as a working poet? By the way he used his harpoon, accuracy. By ear, we knew it. So did E.E. Cummings, who charted spacings, and Charles, being by nature big, just took up and spread himself all over the pages as he did his kitchen, his sleeping room, and the house of any guest he was with. So, this continues on.
and it could make you cry. I've cried reading this. But that's all I wanted to kind of get at today, is I think that there's a reason why Plato banished the poets. I think that poets put a mirror up to you, and I think that it's not entertainment. I think it's an experience. And personally, when I read poetry, I feel responsible to the attention that I have and responsible for the decisions that I make and the life I choose to live. And I don't find that anywhere in America. So that's all I wanted to talk about. And there's tons, as it goes on, it's lovely, and you know. But it's here in the library if you want to examine more about their relationship.
Yes, thank you.
Very good. Yes.